Hello, welcome to Universal Soul Love. This is David Love, the detective, and Dr. Lana Love will be with us momentarily. Today we have a friend, Lisa Schmermerhorn, with us, who I met at the National Guild of Hypnotists convention in 2011. I took a David Quigley's past life regressionist therapist course, who's with the Alchemy Institute in California, and we're very glad to have you on the show today, Lisa. Oh, and here's Lana.
Hello, everybody.
Hello there. Thank you. Hi. Thank you so much for having me. And just so you know, it's Schmermerhorn.
Oh, I'm
sorry. I've had many different pronunciations. It's okay.
So, Lisa, it's I'm really excited to have you on the show today to talk about personal growth, and you know, we're going to talk a little bit about childhood trauma and sexual abuse, and some philosophies of life and energy healing and all sorts of mind body healing techniques. And
Lisa, you bring with you a wealth of knowledge. I understand, apart from doing the past life regression, you're also a Reiki master, and you do emotional release methods, energy medicine, and you've, I believe, studied with shamans.
She does a lot with shamanism, and she's a well-known public speaker with a lot of experience. And so this is going to be a really exciting show with these topics today. So thank you so much for coming on, Lisa.
Well, thank you so much. I'm really excited to be here, and this is such a great reunion. I really enjoyed meeting you a couple of years ago at the Guild. It's such a wonderful organization. I've met people from all over the world.
Yeah, I mean, it was so long ago, and it was this was just such great timing, because this is a subject that Lana and I have been really, you know, tackling with for quite a while. I mean, Lana has quite a few patients with trauma issues, and I certainly have as a private detective. I've just seen so much in the criminal justice system and with private clients and domestic issues around this. And I've met so many women and men struggling, and it's affected their lives in such a traumatic
way. Trauma is such a universal sort of issue with people, and that I'm a therapist and psychiatrist, and I just find that almost every one of my patients has had trauma, especially sexual abuse. It's rampant, and it's so sad, but it's also very exciting to be able to heal people, and there's so many different ways of approaching it. Lisa, I'm wondering whether you could perhaps tell us how you came to be a healer and of abuse victims and other things. How did you get to this place in your life?
Well, it was interesting. I had always had, how do I explain, just this feeling like I never felt like I belonged. I always felt like I was kind of an outsider. And it was interesting. I was at a dear friend of mine, Chrissy's house, and she had a woman there who was there as a speaker talking about angels and angel messengers, and that there were beings around you there supporting you and being there for you. And I thought to myself, never heard of something like this, but this is fascinating, and I couldn't get it out of my head. And so what I did was I contacted this woman, and her name is Karen Paulino. She had studied with Doreen Virtue out in California. And I just said to Karen, I really need to know more. And as I began to study with her, I was so enamored with her, I wanted to be her. So I studied everything that she studied. So she was a Reiki master. I became a Reiki master. She was a hypnotist. She was the reason why I became a hypnotist. And the more I did all this work, and then I was done with all this training, and I realized I couldn't be here at her, I had to figure out who I wanted to be. And I have this really cool story. When I was training to be a hypnotist, I was talking to the woman who trained me. You might know her, Pat McIsaac. She's pretty big with the National Guild of Hypnotists.
Yes,
I do. Yeah. she also does some other work, some metaphysical work, and she said to me, your spirit guide is here. And I was like, that's interesting. I'd never heard of a spirit guide before. And she said, he wants you to read a book. I was like, okay. She said, I have it in here somewhere, and she searched the room. She couldn't find it, so she left the room but never told me the name of the book. And across the room, a book illuminated. I got up, walked across the room, pulled the book out of the shelf, and just when I did that, she walked over and said to me, oh, yes, that's the book he wants you to read. I almost fell over.
That's amazing.
And it was the book, the book was called Soul Retrieval by Sandra Ingerman. And I read it, and I thought to myself, oh, that's nice. Who does that? I'm not an indigenous person. I can't do that. And I gave her back the book. So I was in another class doing some training, and a woman walked up to me randomly and said to me, I was just at this health fair last weekend, and there was a woman there who's a shaman who's looking for an apprentice, and I thought that I would just give this to you. So I held this paper in my hand. It was her brochure, and I thought, okay, I guess I need to follow this. And I went to meet with her, and we ended up, I trained with her for 3 years. And it's been this incredible ride of just synchronicities and following these, you know, I call them the breadcrumbs or whatever, you know, being guided to, you know, from one thing to another.
Wow.
And so, yeah, I have many, many stories of synchronicity. I call them my little miracles that have happened.
I know synchronicity all too well. I think so many of our listeners are familiar with your story. And you know, it was funny. I caught on to the very first thing you said was when you started to talk about how you felt sort of a little bit different. You felt like an outsider. And I was speaking with a woman in our network just the other day about this, how she was in school. And she just, I wonder, you know, we all seem to feel that way, but there are people who start out, and then they go on a journey similar to yours, like I did. I also did shamanic journeying and soul retrieval at different times with different teachers. And, you know, there are people who, when they say, you know, I felt different, I felt a bit of as an outsider, and then they actually do go on this sort of path to becoming a healer or something similar. So I wonder what that's all about.
Well, a part of it was, for me, growing up in a situation where I really had no sense of self, because there were so many different forms of abuse that, for me, it was about, you know, I wasn't allowed to make decisions on my own. I wasn't allowed to, there were so many different aspects of things that when I went off on my own, I really had no sense of self. I had no idea who I was, what I liked, what I wanted, and so I just kind of went along for the ride for a long time, just being lost, doing what other people expected of me instead of being true to me, because I had no idea even how to access that.
It's interesting that you say that, because I had looked at your timeline on Facebook, and I noticed that you posted something about Viktor Frankl, and it was about life is not about finding happiness, but it's about finding meaning. And Lana and I we talked about that last night. We have been exploring that more and more, and I was exploring that with, again, someone in our network the other day, that life has no meaning, and in fact, you go out and you make meaning, because things we give things in life, our experiences, we give it our interpretations, and we give it our labels, and we give the world meaning, the world outside of us meaning, when there actually is no meaning. And so if we find our passion and our true self, and we, you know, we start to follow that path, and we do find meaning in life. So
I think that's one of the most powerful things that we can have in our life, to actually have meaning or to find our meaning. And I guess to be able to find the meaning of our lives is part and parcel of perhaps finding our identity.
Well, that's exactly right. And what I have found, especially with working with clients and myself, that our wounds become our greatest gifts. Because as I searched to heal my wounds, I became an expert at that. No one else could understand those feelings like I could. And then I had the ability to recognize it in other people, and intuitively I developed this gift of being able to just know things and have this understanding. And also being an empath of feeling and experience, feeling what other people feel, it just became very intuitive for me. And so, it's interesting because it became, a thing with me that, you know, I could recognize someone who had had similar experiences that I had before they even opened their mouth. I could just tell. I would know.
I'm laughing because that's the same with me. I often, you know, I'm empathic and I often just, I'm sure that's how you and I met. I mean, we ate lunch together at the convention, and I guess you feel things and you can read people. Because I have experience as a private detective, I developed that intuitive skill to read people quickly in order to learn how to work with them and their emotions, because you learn to see inside of people, and when they speak, you learn to read the feelings of the words rather than the words themselves, and you look for the meaning, the deeper meaning, so that you can better work with people and help them and help, you know, you with your own, whatever it is you're trying to do to accomplish. So I totally understand. And I guess it's funny how you do sort of attract people into your life and with similar experiences.
It's like people have a different, you know, every person has their own energy resonance, and like people are attracted to each other, whether what they have in common is pain and trying to heal or a particular interest or passion.
You know, because for me, working in criminal defense and with missing children and everything that I did, it was about, you know, it was about sort of being the activist and the protector, but there was sort of a sense that I wanted to, and as a problem solver, I was trying to fix people, just as you do, Lana, you know, as a psychiatrist and therapist, and Lisa. So I guess we all sort of naturally attract each other that way, and it's a very odd universe, works in strange ways.
Well, it's fascinating as well. It's amazing, really amazing. And I think it's just wonderful that with some people who have these wounds, they become healers. I mean, I think it's just the most amazing path of self-healing as well. It's not right for everyone, though.
No, but
it's only
like
right for some people.
It's like Lisa said, no one could be as much of an expert at healing herself.
That's right, yes.
And so you develop that special gift to do what you're best at.
Although the other thing that I have found is, and something that's come up with my patients, is that sometimes through healing, through therapy, a very unusual fear that comes up is actually giving up the pain once you near completion, because if you give up the pain, you can give up your very identity. You can identify so much with what happened. Have you found that, Lisa, in your work?
Oh, you know what? Not only have I found that in my work, I was one of them for a very long time. I enjoyed living as a victim unconsciously for many years. I had no sense of that's what was going on. But I lived in that sense of poor me, you know, I'm a victim, everything bad happens to me, and it created this, you know, spiral of depression that went deeper and deeper. And when I was training with the shaman, my depression had gotten so bad that she wouldn't work with me anymore unless I went on antidepressants. And I said, how remarkable that a shaman would put me on antidepressants. But I knew deep down in the core of my soul that if I went on antidepressants just for me, that doesn't mean that they don't work for other people. I mean, this was just for me. I'm so sensitive to medications and things like that, that I knew that I needed to go through the work and get through that pain and get rid of it without going on medication, because I knew that I was eventually going to have to go through that fire, and I didn't want to prolong it. And so I ended up, I stopped working with her, and I moved on to someone else. And I've had to pick, you know, you pick and choose your healers and who works with you, you know, who works well with you. And I really found that I orchestrated, you know, moving from one healer, one therapist, one shaman, one whatever I needed at the time, you know, to get through what I needed to do.
Lisa, on the topic of identity, I'm wondering whether you have had an even further experience, though, into, I'm not talking about identifying as a victim, but I'm talking about people who have been abused and who have the strength and the power to, you know, overcome it and in fact become healers. Even when you look at that, it's still all about healing and abuse. And what I have found with some people is that they, when they are almost better, they are and no longer victims in any sense of the word, they are afraid of actually almost giving up the memories or perspective of abuse because
the victim role has been
But I'm not talking about just the victim role. Even if you give up the victim role and if you become...
Who am I?
These a lot of people who have struggled through this and are no longer victims, it's still their very essence and their very passion is there to overcome this pain, and therefore everything in their life revolves around perhaps a reaction to their pain and pain in the world. And though if they're no longer a victim, and even if they're sort of, you know, very much sovereign beings,
their way of operating in the world has changed.
No, but their whole way of being has been defined from this point of pain. And of course, identity is so much more than that.
We know that consciousness has no identity whatsoever, and that, like Buddha said, there is a no self. And when you meditate, you find that there is just awareness there, so that you can. We know that through manifesting, there is unlimited possibilities, and you can be anything you want and create any kind of identity or life that you want, or circumstances for yourself, I guess. So we can create any kind of meaning that we really want based on the fact that consciousness is basically no self.
So I guess I'm just wondering whether that goes one step further, Lisa, that, you know, people that you have treated who have been victims and who have been able to give up the victim role and in fact conquer that, and then maybe even become passionate about helping others through having contact with you, it's still a defining of self around abuse. Now, is it possible to go further than that and actually identify yourself in other ways or perhaps give up that identity, as David was saying? Because some of my patients are actually afraid of getting fully better because they have known nothing more than a perspective fully from pain. One of my patients, for instance, is very touching. She is very empathic and she is very much a giver. And it's like when her pain goes, she still wants to help other people's pain. But if other people's pain goes, it's like her very meaning of existing has gone. And therefore, it's almost like disorientating for her. And you have to almost build up an identity from something else and create completely new meaning. Now that's actually going a step beyond, being a sovereign being and fighting back against the abuse. It's actually going beyond the abuse.
I think I do have an answer for that, but I'll give Lisa
a turn. Is this getting a little bit too metaphysical?
No, I do understand.
I'm just a little unclear exactly because I've seen it go two ways. I've had people come to me primarily when people come to me, it's for weight loss, because most women who have had any kind of abuse will often create an armor around them of protection.
That's right.
And so I had a client who came to me who had issues with her husband. He was very controlling. And so what happened was she didn't want to, and he told her that he wasn't physically attracted to her. So she refused to lose the weight because she was afraid that if she did lose the weight, he wouldn't be attracted to her if she was thin. So, you know, it's like people will hold on to an identity because they need to define themselves. But what I also do, what I'll do with people is I do something called timeline where I ask people to go through their, you know, their negative events through their life under hypnosis and clear out those negative events so that they don't carry them anymore. So like in my case, yes, I've had issues in my life and I struggled and there was a time where I had to run around and rescue everyone because that was my, you know, I had my cape on and I was running around rescuing. And then when I stopped identifying with that, I was able to just look back and go, oh, you know, I'm here to help this person, but I don't identify as a victim anymore. I'm here to empower. But it, I still have that same background. That hasn't changed. Does that make sense?
It does make sense.
It comes from a different place. It comes from a different place. It comes from a place of strength instead of coming from a place of pain.
Yes.
Because people say to me, oh, my gosh, isn't that depressing working with these people? I'm like, no, when that light bulb goes off and that person finally gets it, that's the greatest feeling in the whole world.
It was strange, Lisa. You were a teacher for me, and I don't know if you know that when we launched at the convention, because, you know, I had been going through sort of the tail end of my spiritual awakening. I mean, it's a lifelong spiritual journey, but you started, you know, telling me things, ideas about responsibility and you know how that plays into sort of creating your life, manifesting the life that you really want, and it really struck me hard, these ideas, these theories and these concepts that you were giving me and the conversation that we had. And it just had a big effect on me. So you were sort of, you know, healing me right at that moment. And I guess a lot of times, like I always say, we're teachers and students for each other, always, with everyone we meet. All our experiences is a lesson in all things for us if we look for it or we're open to it. So That's you know, one way I see this is, you know, about the responsibility and how you realize that you are in control of your mind, your thoughts, your feelings, and you can change things that way.
It's very complex, isn't it? It's incredibly complex. And I guess what I was talking about was going from victim to someone who's perhaps a passionate fighter and a warrior against the wounds, and then going beyond that to see almost that, oh, how should I put it? Yeah. Stepping onto rather difficult, controversial ground here, but that the perpetrator and the victim are two sides of the same coin. Going beyond that into non-duality. Does that make sense?
Yeah, this was a conversation that I'd had with Lisa about, you know, and I've, as a detective, I've seen this, you know, again, I just talked about this, that you're learning to understand the other person and the other person's experiences and the origin for their behavior. And of course, Lisa and I, you know, we took David Quigley's past life regressionist therapy class together, and we learned about karmic contracts and very controversial theories about, you know, why there's certain dynamics in families. And
it certainly sounds like in past life regression, you can actually wipe the slate clean.
Right.
Is that one way of putting it, Lisa?
Well, what's interesting is I studied with some shaman from Peru. I spent some time there last year, and then they came to the U.S., and I worked with them again. They're called the Twin Shaman. And what's interesting is they have a philosophy that we have karma from this life, karma from past life, and ancestral karma as well.
Oh, my God, that's loaded,
ancestral karma. So we have a lot of stuff to work through.
Me too.
So the ancestral karma can go back 7 generations. So let's say you have an ancestor going back 7 generations that did something really awful, like really, really awful, and they call it a compacto. And so that compacto actually goes down generationally through your DNA, through their ancestors, 7 generations. So when you see patterns of this is their you know, their teachings was, if you see a tremendous amount of cancer in a family or a tremendous amount of mental illness, if you see a pattern that's going down generationally, they believe that that's from the compacto. And so they taught me this technique to release that so that you stop, you cut that cord so it no longer continues throughout the generation.
Oh, wow. Perhaps, Lisa, you could tell us a little bit about how to do that.
Yeah, because I think, once again, she's teaching me something again that I'm familiar with but didn't actually know the name for. You know, because my higher self, you know, I have, if, as I call my higher self, a collective, because I believe it's like there's spirits in this collective, past lives that sort of organize as a group and work together, and that is my higher power. And, you know, throughout these lives, there's been... in this, these past lives, I believe there's been, you know, some behaviors and things that I don't personally ascribe to, that I think there should be some healing done, and there's forgiveness that needs to be done. And my higher self has actually written articles years ago and about, you know, forgiveness and about just trying to make amends. And I even have one that calls himself the Redeemer, that wants to improve and do better. And I think this may be what you're talking about, Lisa.
Well, this is, you know, what they were talking about with the ancestral karma, though, was about, let's say you had a relative going back that did some, you know, that murdered a lot of people and came to power. It was almost like they formed this compact, like, if I murder these people, I will have all this money and riches. And so they became, they came to power from that reason. And so right. So their descendants suddenly have to deal with the negative karma of their ancestor.
Yes.
So
yes, that's what I'm talking about. Yeah.
Yeah. So what they had us do is, they're very ritual based. So basically, I would take you and lay you down, and from your midsection down represents your mother's karma, ancestral karma, and from your midsection up represents your father's family ancestral karma. And so you're working with these white tapered candles, and you basically take a candle that represents your mother's side, and you're basically using this to swipe your body at 7 times. Your entire body, down your legs and your sides, your inner thighs, your torso, your entire body, and you're rolling as I'm swiping. And then you do the same thing with the candle for the father's side. And then you take each candle and melt them separately. And they gave us this water. It's San Pedro, this holy water that they gave us. And you pour that and mix it with regular tap water and put the melted wax, you melt the tapers and pour the wax into the water, and it forms this molten blob. And she could pick up the molten blob and say, look at it, and give you a full reading of your ancestral history from that molten blob, that it was all then taken out. And then you had to take that molten blob and bury it. And it was really fascinating, because I had a friend who I did that on, and she went into a terrible, terrible, like, she was having physical pain when I was doing the releasing. And she said, you know, I have an ancestor who did some pretty horrible things with the Native Americans. He founded a town, and he butchered a lot of people. And so she literally felt it when I did this ritual to her. She felt it released in a huge way.
Wow.
Yeah, that's interesting.
So it's true what they say, that the sins of the fathers are visited upon the children.
Dear. Yeah, I'm sort of aware of some of those things from some of the past lives as well, like you're talking about, where there were sort of deals made and you know, certain spirits came into power, and, you know, and a lot of things like that. So it's
interesting, because it's a completely different way of looking at things, because, of course, science believes the DNA is just inherited.
Sure. It's a lineage. It's a physical lineage rather than a spiritual lineage, right?
Although I guess now that they're actually starting to say that our DNA can be affected by energy, which is, you know, it's starting to go into the same understanding that the body and the spirit are but one.
Yeah, mind, body, spirit. I mean, that's the, that's the spiritual community's view of it. It's not as scientifically evidence-based.
Well, absolutely fascinating.
Yeah, but I can relate. That's great. That's really good information. Thank you, Lisa.
We should take a break now. And then perhaps when we come back, perhaps you could tell us perhaps the most amazing of your
success
patients,
stories.
Yeah, and healings, you know, perhaps. And maybe you could tell us a little bit more about some of these amazing shamanic techniques.
And, yeah, and your work and how you can be reached. I think it'd be good. Okay.
Do you have a website?
Yes, I do. It's www.lisashermerhorncoaching.com. And Schermerhorn is Schermerhorn.
Fantastic. So people can go online and have a look and see what you do. And do you do coaching online or do people come to you in person?
I do both. The coaching online I've done through Skype or on the phone. As you know, you can do hypnosis on the phone. If you come to my office, you'll get energy work done as well. So you get an added bonus when you come to my office.
I certainly highly recommend you. So
fantastic. Okay, look, we'll take a break now and then return soon. This is Dr. Lana Love. Welcome to our show.
Today we have Lisa. I'm sorry, I'm difficulty for
it's okay.
Shit, that's Schermerhorn.
Schermerhorn.
With us today. And Lisa is an energy healer of so many different modalities.
And a hypnotherapist and a public, well-known public speaker and a personal development coach and a good friend of mine from the National Hypnotist Convention.
So, Lisa, in the time that we have left, it's such a shame that we haven't got 5 or 6 hours to discuss all this, but perhaps in the 20 minutes or so we have left, you can tell us about your most exciting, perhaps, case and healing case with a patient. Maybe you can tell us a little bit more about your shamanic experiences, and then maybe you can tell us about the life in between life regression therapy.
That's so cool. I love doing those. Just quick, I want to give a shout out to a friend of mine, Doris, who lives in the same town I do. She's a big fan of yours, and when she saw my name, she was so excited. She was like, "How do you know David and Lana? I'm a big follower of theirs." So, I just want to let you know you really are all around the world.
Wow. Well, big hello to her then.
Yes, from the land down under. We could take calls. I guess we've tried to take callers in the past, but there's just so much information to get out with our guests that it's very difficult. Mm. But thank you so much. That's wonderful.
So I just wanted to give you a shout out because she was so excited that I was going to be talking to you.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening. Yeah. It's great. I loved everyone on our network. We have a lot of great people. It's such a joy.
So, well, there's a couple that came to mind when you asked because there's so many, you know, every single person has a unique experience. I have to say, I had someone who came to me for weight loss, I want to say 2 years ago, and she had been on antidepressants for 30 years. And the byproduct of this work was that she ended up going off her antidepressants.
Mm-hmm.
So that was really amazing, doing the timeline, going through her childhood, releasing all of the negative events that had happened to her, releasing the saboteur inside of her that was sabotaging, aspects of her life.
Wow, that's to me as a psychiatrist, that is fascinating because, of course, I'm a therapist, but as well I do use antidepressants. And, you know, certainly statistics show that the suicide rate has really plummeted after using antidepressants. However, therapists always, you know, are in a dilemma of, you know, do antidepressants block healing or not? And I guess I'm someone who believes that obviously personal safety is important, and I don't think that it's good to suffer too much. However, I also do believe it's important to work through things. So that's really fascinating.
Lana's unusual in the sense that she, you know, with the spiritual connection, you know, and Lana and I have talks all the time about different types of mental disorders, like multiple personality disorder, which is now dissociative identity disorder, and the spiritual connection there. And I sometimes talk about spirit possession and
I must say that maybe I'm, you know, putting my neck out here a little bit.
Your professional reputation at risk here with this.
However,
an interesting.
With some of my patients, not all of them, but with a few, psychiatry cannot define what they have, what has happened to them. And I'm not just talking about personal experience, because obviously as a therapist, you deal so much with the person and their experience, not the diagnosis, of course. But with some of my patients, honestly, it seems like some sort of possession state or some past life issue. There is something beyond what therapists would normally deal with. And that's given me a new respect for the fact that there are things beyond what we are aware of.
You are open-minded and you realize that we do not know everything. Science and medical science does not know everything and have all the answers.
Yes.
And I went through shamanic journeying with an American shaman in Florida years ago. And I started to learn about some of this. And I've seen things that I can't explain. But, you know, I learned, and I've worked with a lot of trauma people with traumatic events, childhood trauma, and I've seen how, you know, you can lose parts of yourself, parts of your consciousness will actually leave you.
What an amazing concept.
So, I mean, this is just, I've written a book on, you know, metaphysical theories, but I do believe that there could be some truth to, you know, a lot of the work that we're doing with soul retrieval and integration and all of these things that Lisa's talking about.
And of course, it seems to me that this is going beyond what a normal therapist would be doing. You're looking at the area of energy and past lives.
Sure.
And honestly, I'd like to share with you, Lisa, and with our listeners that David and I had a really interesting experience with a shaman when we were in America, shaman and with a plant healer.
A plant teacher.
And the experience was, wow, phenomenal to say the least. But not just in terms of the experiences I had inside myself, but what I found in the people that were with us as a group. I guess my eyes, my third eye was probably open for a little while, and I literally saw this woman change, her face changed from her face to the face of another person and then another person, and then her abdomen was moving as if there was something inside trying to get out. It was frightening, but also amazing. And after that, I thought, oh, my God, Lana, you need to know about this. There is stuff beyond what you can see that is really behind what we're about. Lisa, perhaps in terms of that, can you tell us a little bit more about shamanic practices? And have you seen people change in front of you and their body writhing?
I have a really, really fascinating story. One of the things with soul retrieval, a traditional shaman will lay hip to hip, shoulder to shoulder, they drum, and then they'll journey to what's called the lower world. There's the upper world, middle world, and lower world. It's not heaven and hell, just for people who are not familiar with this, to go to retrieve the parts of the soul that have left, you know, for safety purposes. And so a shaman will go down and bring those parts back. What I learned from a shaman that I went to see, Stephen Farmer, I don't know if you're familiar with his work, but he gave me this idea of actually, he did it through guided meditation, which is very similar to hypnosis, but I will actually hypnotize someone, have them go through a portal into the lower world and retrieve the parts themselves.
Oh, goodness.
And have conversations awesome. With the younger parts of themselves. Now, I've had sure. people bring back physical body parts, like their arms, mm-hmm. their legs, their heart, their brain. I've had people bring back younger versions of themselves. So one of the people that I worked with, I have many stories. I would say that form of soul retrieval is the most powerful work I've ever done. But I had someone who journeyed down. They retrieved their legs. They had suffered a lot of trauma, two alcoholic parents, you know, had a lot of difficulty, went through a lot in their lives. He retrieved the different, they would literally go, there's my leg, and they would put that on, and there's my other leg, and then their heart, they put their heart. And then they went over to this bowl of water, and they said, that's holy water, and I'm being instructed to wash my eyes with them. So when they opened their eyes, when the session was done, their eye color had changed. It was like a cloudy grayish blue before, and then it was an aqua blue. And I sat there with my jaw open, staring at him, and he kept looking at me going, do you have a problem? I'm like, could you please go over and look in the mirror, because I feel like I'm hallucinating here. Have your eyes changed? And he said, you know what? I've never seen the color of my eyes until now. I never knew what color my eyes were.
That is an amazing experience.
Oh, wow. We must look into this more. I'm off to see a show. You know,
Leonard and I, we really do this show much like I do. My writing has always been for myself. It's a form of self-expression in the radio show and the work that we do. I mean, we don't really make any money off this. We actually, this is out of pocket for us. But we do this for the personal growth. And, of course, in bringing you on the show, this is all a learning experience for both of us. And it's just a continuation of our own journey and our own, you know, just healing and growing, and it's just so wonderful that, you know, have you on here to tell us all of this.
Lisa, could you tell us about the life between life regression? Is that different from past life regression?
The past life regression is about an hour and a half long, and you're literally going back into one previous lifetime to learn a lesson for your highest and best. With the life between lives, you come in and you do, it's two separate sessions. You come in and do a traditional past life regression. Then you come back a week later and then you do two past life regressions in a row. And then you go into a third one, and when that one is complete, instead of coming back, you ask to go up to the heavens consciousness. And the fascinating thing about that is you always get met by your guide, and there's always a gate. The gates are always different,
gate, yes.
But the guide is always there, and there's always a gate. And sometimes there's loved ones on the other side. And from that moment on, I'm no longer guiding. The spirit guide is in charge. And there's pretty much traditional places that they tend to go. There's a room where the Akashic records are, for those who know what that is. The Akashic records are where records of every single event that's ever happened in the universe, particularly your soul. So you can go in, and if you need information, you have access to those books. Sometimes you need to go into a room to have a healing, especially if you've had a particularly difficult life. They'll take you in and take you to a room and have you healing. Then you have people who will go and meet their soulmates. They'll meet there's like an overseeing group, kind of like the tribunal that oversees your spirit guide to make sure that you're on track. You can come prepared with as many questions as you want. Some of them will get answered, some will not. Some of the soulmates that you may see will be people that you know. Others will just show in soul form because maybe you don't know them in this lifetime yet or are not going to see them in this lifetime, but you're part of a soul group that you've had many lifetimes together. And then the last one is always where you get to see, go to the room where you get to see what two other lifetimes that you had a possibility. They'll show you had this lifetime, and when you work through with your guide what life you want to contract for, you have options. So you get to see what the other lifetimes were that you had a choice to take a look at. And it's almost a movie screen, and you can see, oh, well, I didn't choose this person because maybe they didn't have the intellectual capacity that I wanted, or they didn't have the physical prowess that I was looking for this particular lesson, or there wouldn't have been enough of this in that life. So it really helps you take ownership of why you chose this lifetime. And it helps you from the standpoint of understanding the circle of life, that the soul is eternal and that you just keep coming back lifetime after right. lifetime. And so
that sounds like an amazingly deep therapy.
I
wow.
actually, we
it
only
is,
have
and it's,
we have 2 minutes left.
But I, you know, in saying that, I wanted to say that I actually got a spirit message last night, and it was that, I learned that, like with activists, we tend to become absorbed into our thing to the point that sometimes we become, you know, we get this hatred of humanity, this cynicism. And the message I got was that you want to be kind because it's good for your spiritual growth to be kind to animals and people and learn kindness and love, but not to the point that when you see pain and suffering in the world that you become so absorbed into it, because we are eternal beings and nothing is created and destroyed, and therefore anything that's destroyed is not really destroyed. So we can actually be non-attached to it, and we can still be kind and loving without suffering.
Which is good news. It's important to react to pain and stop it if we can, but if we can't, it's okay. Life is eternal. So, look, we've got to wrap up. Thank you so much for coming, Lisa.
Yeah, thank
you. I am so fascinated by the shamanic work.
Yeah, this was such a great interview to have with
absolutely.
You today.
And just once again, just before we finish, your website then is
www.lisashermerhorncoaching.com.
Fantastic. All right. Well, look, lovely to talk to you. And hopefully we'll have contact in the future. And thanks, everyone, for listening.
Yeah, thank you so much.
And goodbye from Universal Soul Love. This is Lana Love
and David Love.
Have a great week.